was one gentleman, actually, his son is still here fishing. He came home one day, he had 25-pound salmon, you know, and he had it in the bath with a towel on to keep it fresh. And the son came in, he says, Jesus, he says, that's a big salmon. How much did you get for that? He says, I get 6 months if you don't show up about it, he says.
Hello and welcome to the Ireland on the Fly podcast about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. This week we're turning our attention to the famous River Slaney. The river that was once the doyen of spring salmon rivers in Ireland has suffered more than most in recent times, but there's still anglers and custodians of the Slaney that are fighting to keep it going and recover. So to hear more about their work and to hear more about those halcyon days, we're joined by Richard Burgess, former chairman of the Slaney River Trust. But before we hear from Richard, Tom, I believe you were hobnobbing it with the fly fishing elite in London this past weekend.
Yeah, I was asked over to give a presentation at the Fly Fishers Club in London, which is in the Sava Club in Brook Street. It's a fantastic spot, though. It is unreal. Did show you a few clandestine photos, because you're not meant to take photos when you're in there.
I don't know where I got them from.
You know, no, they didn't happen. But yeah, I wasn't aware of that from it, but as soon as I found out, I stopped. Their library is extensive. They try to have every book published on fly fishing in the UK that they try, that everyone that has been published in the UK and Ireland.
Sponsored by Waters there.
I didn't see it.
They said every book.
I haven't seen it. Now
I'm gonna get onto them and ask them. I'm looking for this book.
Now I will be honest with you, I didn't go to the more recent ones.
Or the basement. No,
I didn't. And actually what I did do, the only one I looked for was Mike Shanks's. Because Mike Shanks does the fly tying, and Mike Shanks' book was there in the '80s. But I actually, that the one, you see, you know me, I'm a sucker for old books, so I didn't even look. There was one of the more recent ones that I looked at, which is Fishing in Urban Areas, with some guy in England, and that was the most recent one. And there was a whole thing. So next time, mind you, it's every 6 years I'm asked. So in 6 years' time.
Actually, so what was the talk on?
I gave a talk on Loch Corrib, people. No, the Western Lakes, the people, the places, and the fishing.
Discuss.
Right. Yeah, discuss. I said a lot about the old chairman of the club, a guy by the name of Paddy Laverty, who's chairman of the Fly Fishers Club, but he started fishing in Carnamona in the late 60s. And that was how my relationship built up with the club. Unfortunately, Paddy fell foul of COVID in 2020.
Oh my God.
Yeah, God. And COVID got him off. Yeah.
He would have been a great interview.
Oh, he'd have been fantastic. He's grand. So I had a lot of pictures of him from out fishing with them and everything. So that was a bit of the people, because everybody there would have known him. But then I had other things, that pictures for the pub in the village, pints and competitions and things. And I had the one then of, there's a film that's just come online at the moment. It was done by Cathal O'Shannon in 1968. And it's of mayfly fishing in Collamook, and the clip at the end is my grandfather, my mother's father, speaking in 1968, and he was 81 then.
Right? My God.
And so, because he more or less says, if you ever watch that, he says how he used to go fishing for a month in May, and once he got to the cut on the way up, he forgot he had a family, a job, a wife. It's a great tip. So I played that, and then it just did a bit on the fishing and everything. But look, It was nice. It was a nice place to go to. And you do the presentation, you have a meal afterwards. And yeah, it's very the civilized. Whole ethos. Yeah, the whole ethos is nice. But like, you know, at the end of the day, and this is, I would say, it's no different to any other club. Okay, it's shirt and tie, but like, that's, okay, that part of Mayfair in London, that's every club that you're there, that's the way they exist. That's their rules. And that's,
I know, I'm slagging it, because in fairness, I actually have the copy of Andrew Hurd's book, The History of the Fly Fishers
right.
Club.
So, yeah,
big hardback version. And it's a brilliant read, actually. Even just dipping in and out the the historic stuff, and you know, he takes you through, like, you know, it is very much one of those clubs. It's, you know, prime ministers of, you know, being the members, and you know, given speeches, and they had the famous dry fly versus nymph debate, you know,
Skews and Halford,
yeah, Skews and all that.
And there's pictures of Skews up there. This picture, they have a framed Greenwell's Glory,
wow,
tied for Can Greenwell, I think. You know, they have, I showed you, they have Isaac Walton's creel, fishing creel.
Obviously, you can't just walk in off the street, but can you actually go visit that museum? Because I'd love to see that stuff. Like,
yeah, you can, but it has to be by arrangement. It's amazing. I went, like, they have every copy of the Fishing Gazette. I picked up one from 1963, and I just tried to get Irish things in it. And yeah. I've seen it earlier on. Two mentions of hatcheries.
Yeah.
Yeah. One in Corran, which I wasn't aware of, and one in Killorglin. I see then there was fisheries report and all the work that was put into hatcheries around the country. And this is, you know, and then I got to read Joseph Adams' book of 1924, which I wanted to check up on. I don't have a copy of it.
What's that?
And Joseph Adams, he wrote three books on fishing, and he wrote one in 1924 solely on Ireland. And more mention of hatcheries than that. That's 100 years ago. It was amazing to see going through these things, you know. Sorry, no, I didn't check for yours. I'll have to look at that next time. Now I look it up, but I just really went to the old ones. And then the really old ones, the first editions, like the first edition of the O'Gorman.
Wow.
Practice of Angling. But those ones were under lock and key.
Yeah.
So anything they're under lock and key, and I wasn't given the key.
That's one rabbit hole we'll go down sometime.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Well, look. We'll get back to this week's episode and Richard Burgess, who's the former chairman of the Slaney River Trust. And I first asked him about what made the River Slaney so special to Irish salmon anglers.
It was a fantastic river. It was known as the Queen of Salmon Rivers in Ireland.
And did you grow up nearby, or what was your background with it?
Well, yes, we're farmers here in Tullow. And I used to go trout fishing, I suppose. That was the main thing. And you know, there was the legal fishing, and there was those that looked after their own properties. But like, I know of one person here, Willie Byrne, and he's wrote about him. One of his best days was 11 fish, and they were up to 20 pound weight, like, on the fly. Those are the ones that he could speak about, recorded, a Willie Byrne here in hour. And it's actually wrote about him in a book by Eugene O'Connor here that wrote about those times when people lived on salmon and lived on rabbits. And a salmon was, you know, a week's wages for a salmon. So, like, there was actually land, I'm sure, bought out of salmon back that time, because you get a pound a week. And I think salmon were making a pound, actually, back in the 60s. So it was a serious river, and there was a John Fitzgerald here in Tullow used to deliver the salmon over to London by train and boat. It was a serious business, I'd say, for people, but unfortunately, you know, poaching was a serious thing, all right, yeah, but like, that happened everywhere. It wasn't just Slaney.
You could kind of understand how poaching would be a problem when you could make that much money on salmon.
Oh, yeah. Look, it happened on every river.
Yeah.
You know, and the people who lived on the river, they had their stretch, and they protected it, you know, for themselves,
yeah.
You know. But that same Willie Byrne, actually, he caught a 35-pound salmon one day. And to keep him fresh, put a damp cloth on him in the bath. So that fish filled the bath, you know, from up the bottom. But he went down to the river again, and he got a second one, 35-pound weight as well. So, like, that's the kind of fish the Slaney was renowned for. Big fish, you know. And up to lately, there's 20-pounders been caught. We don't get them that often up our way because, you know, once they get up above Clahaman, where I'll talk about later, they have a great chance to escape, you know.
Was it always the spring river?
Generally it was. And I'd say it was because, you know, it's nearly the last river fish are going to get to coming around the coast. And every point around the coast has its own challenges, if you know what I'm talking about, like, you know, with nets. And there were smaller nets back that time. And, you know, and every river had their draft nets as well. There was actually 75 net licensed draft net licenses on the Slaney. Ironically, the same length as the Slaney. You know, that's the length of the river, 75 mile long. It rises in Lugnaquilla up in the Glen of Amal there where the army camp, training camp is. And, like, the commandant of that camp, Derry Canley was his name. He was on the Slaney River Trust as well, and they used to protect it from poaching in the spawning time, like, because that's where you want to get them spawning up there. And with serious poaching, like, it was often said, like, that bring foreigners over to, so they can go and gaff a salmon.
Was there many visiting anglers then?
Oh, yes. Well, I remember when I was younger, yeah, there was a Slaney Hotel and Levy's Hotel here in Tullow, and they'd be full up for that early season for 2 months there, people coming to fish. We had one club member, and he caught 240-odd salmon that year. He was told to go fish further upriver to leave a chance for the people who were coming down to fish during the winter. So he went up to the midsection of the club, so he caught as many there. So they said, you may go up further. You know? But the river was full of fish.
They were going to push him up to the Glen of Imal.
Well, they were from the Glen of Imal down at that stage, you know.
Wow.
Because it's a fantastic river. Like, there's the Carrigower River. It's a little tributary up past Ballinglass. The main Slaney rises, goes up into the Glen of Imal, up into where the Kilmoney camp is, where the army camp is. Great spawning grounds up there. Lovely, lovely clean beds. There are issues a bit with pine needles now, all right, with more forestry, but, like, we need forestry to cool the water. That's another issue for juvenile stock. You need colder water, same as on the sea. But the Carrigower is a river that goes up further up to Dunard. And there's a wee tributary off of it, which is only 3 foot wide. It's 3 foot down in the field. But there's a waterfall at the top of it. And when was it? About the late 80s? The farmer decided to deepen out. He got a Hymac in to deep out that water pool at the waterfall. And in the first week of April, he pulled a fresh bar of silver salmon out in the bucket of the Hymac. So that's how far they go, right as far as they can go, if they don't have obstacles.
In terms of the ownership, like, was there the kind of traditional big houses along the river that would own big stretches, or how was it divided up in terms of the ownership?
Yes, it's predominantly it's privately owned. Now, our club here, I'm treasurer in the Tullow Salmon and Trout Anglers Association. That's been 70-odd years going. And we rent fishery from IFI, from the government. And there are a few others as well, and Scarty Anglers have a bit from them. But it's predominantly privately owned, yes. And you see, you want me to speak there about Kingsmill Moore. Like, he had a lovely house there with a mill wheel on it as well. That's right, Kilcarry. That's above Bunclody, below Tullow. And we have fishing ops of that, the club have. But that was a fantastic stretch there. And he wrote about what colours of flies to use and all that sort of stuff. Predominantly blue and yellow for fresh salmon, you know.
And wasn't it like a freak once in a century kind of flood that did his house in?
It came in his front or top door and washed all his records, everything.
Oh, wow.
He had out the other door. It was a serious flood. One of the biggest floods. There was a lot of snow on the mountains that time. I remember it. And heavy rain came then, and both snow and rain hit at the same time. It was a serious flood. Now, there was the Stratford Bridge was taken out up past Ballinglass. It was the only bridge that was taken out, actually. But that was serious flood. Serious flood.
And right. I think he never went back then, is that right, after that?
He never went back there, no. No. But he was good. I don't know if you can see a book, Kingsmill Moore, let's see.
Man-made fish.
That's the old jacket sleeve, yeah. Yeah.
That's one, it's signed by him, actually.
Oh, class. Brilliant.
He left that to a curate there in Clonegal, where he lived close by to. And that curate's wife left it to me there because she knew I was interested in fishing. So
that's a lovely thing to have, Richard, I have to say. I'm green with envy here.
Ironically, somebody gave me a second book like that, the very same, but it's not signed, only a month ago.
Yeah.
I said, you might be interested in that. And I said, well, I will be interested in it, but I have one.
Obviously, people still have good memories of them, Richard, in the area.
Yeah, they do, because Kilcarry is a beautiful spot, and there have been several more people live there since that. And it's idyllic, you know, it's it's lovely. There's a valley there. It's in the valley with trees on both sides, like, you know, which is kind of indicative of that area from ahead, from below Tullow down to Kildavin, with high banks up each side with natural forest on them. It's lovely. Ballon Temple there, owned by the Butler estate. And then we go on down to Bunclody, and there's the Woodbeat, another fantastic, it's one of my favourite places. Between Ballon Temple and the Woodbeat, they're fantastic. I suppose his book was a great inspiration to me for learning how to start tying salmon flies. And I'd try and wish that all young fishermen had learned how to make flies, because to catch a fish, be it a trout or a salmon, on the fly you make yourself, it makes it all the better. There's no doubt about it.
Richard, actually, just on the fly fishing side of it, because it was primarily a spring salmon run on the river, was spinning predominant then because of the conditions?
Yes, well, it would have been, yeah. Up our way here, yes. And fly fishing was kind of started being forced, possibly to save the salmon for the people who'd come down to fish at the weekend. As the local people would think, possibly the more affluent people.
Right.
But early fishing, the salmon are close to the bottom, and there's no doubt about it. The worms was definitely one of the best methods of fishing. Not that I did much of that myself. I only started fishing in the 80s for salmon. I wouldn't have caught half a dozen salmon on the worms, I'd say. I just went on from fly fishing for trout to fish for salmon. So I think I wanted the luckier ones to have the taste for that. Mm. Because the thought about to get the take on the fly is thrill. The play is nearly incidental. But if you can tease the salmon to take the fly, that's the challenge. Mm.
And what made you actually go from trout to the salmon? And do you now go between the two?
With a Schlock Corb and Ferdus de Basil, he gave me the confidence to fish the dry fly. I love dry fly on the lake. It does bring up the good ones.
It's hard to beat it.
Was the our previous chairman, Joey O'Neill, it was his name. He got me into the salmon fishing, I'd say, more than anyone else. Brought me down to the Woodbeat and showed me what it's like to fish for the salmon and the general way about it, you know. But it was 4 or 5 years before I started to catch salmon, you know.
Did you actually trout fish on the river first?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
I was trout fishing at about 4 or 5.
We wouldn't hear about the Slaney as a trout fishery. Mm. What's the trout fishing like on it?
Oh, well, it'd be good. Generally, you'll catch small ones on your wet and dry flies, but you will catch them. I suppose my heyday of our best experience of trout fishing, I'd after witnessing a Canis feed on Loch Corrib, I'd say, and I brought home some of those flies that were selling for that. Now, I didn't even know how it was called back then. I'm talking about 25 years ago.
Yeah.
There was a hatch of blue-winged olives we have on the Slaney, but nearly indicative of Canis. There was that many of them, millions, but I put up one of these little flies and I had one trout just under 4 pound, two over 2.25, and two just under 2 pound, standing in the one spot. Now, they had come up from the deep above where it was an old weir of a mill. So these bigger trout are obviously, you know, sitting under the bushes feeding smaller fish or whatever, but they came up to feed on these hatch of blue-winged olives that night. And I had that small fly that I had brought back from Corrib.
Yeah.
Used 2 pound breaking strain and an 8 foot trout, roosting mocker. So it was fantastic. Like, you wouldn't think, if you've had a pound trout on your standard wet fly and standard dry flies, you're doing well.
Yeah.
But they're there. And I see the guys now fishing the nymphs. They're catching them.
Right.
You know, they're catching trout up to 2 pound.
Yeah, because they're getting down to the.
Yes, yeah.
They're getting down. That's phenomenal. I never knew that. But you see, of course, because Slaney is known as the salmon fishery, and that's all you hear about it.
We have a good sea trout run as well, but when the run is on, they'll run the whole way up. You know, they'll be gone up to Bonn Lass, you know.
It's funny that, because I didn't know too much of it. I thought that they were mainly just at the lower end and at the estuary. I didn't know they run right up, yeah.
No, they run up to spawn, yeah. But yeah, generally people we'll be down around Scarawelsh and up to Killabin, the lower reach.
So obviously, you know, an incredible river, you know, hugely popular with anglers, spring salmon, and, you know, you gave us some of the numbers, size of the fish that were there. UDN hit, obviously, and then, you know, the river recovered. But it really kind of was in the early 2000s that you started to really see kind of things dropping off.
I'd say it was, yeah. I started to keep records there. I just had a book on the dates. I started keeping a record of when I caught trout or the salmon. And that was my first record was 89. Between 89 and 97, I had 140 salmon kept in the record book. Nice. My best year, I think, was 24. But it started to decline after that, I would say, yeah. I was catching about a dozen salmon a year, which would have been considered bad compared to the heydays, like, you know.
Yeah.
Here, Willie Byrne going out and catching 11.
Yeah, when you were saying that. And a couple of 35-pounders then.
Thrown in.
Yeah.
There was one gentleman, actually, his son is still here fishing. He came home one day, he had 25-pound salmon, you know, and he had it in the bath with a towel on to keep it fresh. And the son came in, he says, Jesus, he says, that's a big salmon. How much did you get for that? He says, I get 6 months if you don't show up about it, he says. That was the fishing, like, people caught them.
And from your own records there, Richard, what were them, like, when did it peter off? Like, when did it sort of end off? Like, what months were the most productive?
Yeah, I'd say I started petering off that time there. I see my last record, I had 3 that day. I stopped keeping records. I just lost a bit of interest in the record. But, from then on, I would say, yeah, that was 97. So
at the turn of the century, yeah.
Around here, we would think that Plaham and Weir would be an issue. It's a weir there that the owner has put 3 turbines on.
Oh, right.
So, like, there are 5 or 6 weirs still on Slaney, but that's the only one being used. Now, all these weirs over the years, and there were a lot more than the 5 or 6 that are still here. There's one in Tullow here, there's one in Baughton last, there's one in Ratville, that one at Laham, and there's one at Ahead. And they're all obstacles for migrating fish. And it's not just the salmon, unfortunately. It has stopped the other species as well, lamprey and juvenile fish and trout. But there have been 40-odd years of trying to resolve the issue at Clam. And 2000 was from then on, it started to decline more, all right. There's no doubt about it. And in 2007, the drift nets were bought out. One of our members here, Vincent Dygan, actually deceased a few years now. He was one of the main instigators or people on that crew that fought to get the drift nets out.
Isn't it funny thing that, Richard, people thought when the drift nets would be gone that this would be solving the problem?
Mm.
And yet it was far from it.
Well, far from it, yeah, but are all nets off to sea? I wouldn't think so.
That's another thing.
The Irish ones might be. At least the legal ones, but there's still nets on the sea and there's super trawlers out there.
Well, it's very interesting there, and just go back to it, because I wasn't aware of that, but we did an episode before about the Liffey. Remember that with Mark McAndrew? Mm. Yeah, and it's funny, he highlighted about the weirs as well, the problem on the Liffey, and it was something like, I, as a trout angler, would never have thought it was a problem, and it's funny you bring it up there again now, Richard, and, you know, these are things that can be, should we say, remedied. No, you know, I mean, we can't do what's happening out in the open sea, you know, because we don't know what's happening, but, you know, something like that's close to home and something that can be.
Yes, well, I could write a book about getting weirs out, and I think around the country there's been efforts to get weirs down and opened up, but there has been success. That Vincent Dygan I was talking about, he was actually chairman of the Slaney River Trust for 3 years, and he was chairman, or he was a director on the Nore River Trust, actually, before that. And they successfully put rocky ramps in on 3 or 4 weirs that I know of on the Nore system.
Mm.
And the Lackenweir being the most known one, that's in the middle of Kilkenny. And when the OPW were doing flood relief works on the river that time, they actually re-altered the fish passage over that weir. And for 2 or 3 years, salmon were seen they couldn't get up the weir. So they employed a marine biologist, Alan Sullivan. He's a fishery, he's an honours degree in fisheries management and aquaculture, actually, and a diploma in wildlife and habitat. And they employed him to address the issue, and he installed the rocky ramp there, designed it and put in. It takes 12 cubic metres of water a second, so it's quite a large rocky ramp. They also put two rocky ramps on the Kings River. Now, the Kings River is one-fifth of the water area on the Nore system, and it was void of salmon for years, hundreds of years, I would say, with weirs. And when they put in the rocky ramps and that, people upriver were amazed, saw salmon up straight away.
Wow.
So you can rejuvenate all this habitat.
Tell us a bit about the Slaney River Trust that you're chairman of. Give us a bit of background to it. And is the kind of habitat restoration or conservation is the main thing that you're involved in, is it?
It is, yes. Well, I'm not. I passed on chairmanship there a year ago now. There's Colin White is chairman now, and ironically, his father was a chairman before him. So we're on the next generation of fishermen to try and resolve the issue with Clam is the main thing we're at the moment, trying to resolve that issue. But we do other things. We have cleaned up rivers, tributaries along with. There was a Tom Mernon, one of our directors, he undertook to look after the management of cleaning the Clody River, which is actually flows into Mount Clody. It's actually a Category 5 for water quality. It's one of the cleanest tributaries on the Slaney. We put in fish passes on the weir in Ahead. We've done cleaning riverbeds. We did that with a twin system with one of the rivers in Wales. It was an EU fund camp. We had to twin with a river from another country. That's about 15 years ago I did. And I did a lot of work. We cleaned all the gravel beds up on the main tributary, Swanning tributary, the Deering River, and on the Slaney, main Slaney itself.
The Slaney, it's had three closures, isn't it, in the 21st century, the most recent of which was 2017, is that right?
At least for the people with the rod and line anyway, the legal ones, yeah.
And what was the reason for the closure?
Well, just the numbers.
The numbers have got that low.
Yeah.
The legal side of it has to reach 60% of sustainable numbers, I said. Mm. I think for catch and release. So it's a catch and release river at the moment. Mm. Last year we had a bad year. The year before was actually quite good. There was quite a number of salmon caught. You know, I think that our club had over 100 fish caught and released.
Right.
Which is bad, you know.
Is it hard, though, like, you know, when you're putting all this work in and you're still seeing less and less fish coming back?
Well, it is hard, but I think that's why we adapt. We're starting to fish for trout more, probably.
There is something, though, Richard, I think, you know, like, and even when you look online on forums, you know, when the Slaney reopens and there's even like a buzz and excitement about it. Oh, the Slaney's reopening again. And people, 17th of March, you know, there's, you know, not that we're ever expecting to go back to the, you know, the 70s or 80s, but people do still like that romantic notion of the Slaney's open. You could cast a line in the spring.
Oh, but it's great to get down the first day and stretch the line again, you know, take the wrinkles out after being lying up on a reel all winter.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's the 17th of March, Patrick's Day. It's open this year.
Yeah, the 17th, yes.
Was it always the 17th, Richard?
No, the 26th of February used to be. It was fishing it before that, you know. I'm sure we've all heard the stories, lads going out watching salmon in January, you know. Up in Tuck Mill above Bondlass, I was talking to an older gentleman 1 year, and I said, "Do you ever catch fish up here, you know, letting on?" "Oh, God, you do." "Yeah, I'm coming up here late in the year," he said. "Well, you get a lovely blue one coming in early January," he says, you know.
It's blue.
That's the fresh Paris.
Blue. Nice, a good description of them, actually. Yeah.
Back that time when I used to go up with the previous chairman, Joey Neal, we'd go up during spawn time up on the Deering above Hackettstown, and a great, fantastic spawn beds there. And you'd have a look over all the bridges going up along to see was there any spawn. You'd always see them spawning above a bridge, you know. But when we got up to Hackstown, it was like a bloody carnival with what lamps was on the river. The bailiffs were there. They actually heard us talking in the car, you know. We were able to say, we knew you were up there. We heard you talking in the car. And I said, well, why didn't you go down? He said, there was no point. No point. There was too many of them. There were only two of the bailiffs.
Yeah. Nice.
They did fire at the bailiffs on the main slaney one year, you know, when they went to challenge him, you know. So, like, is it worth your life? You know, but back years ago, like, I used to hear the older lads saying, you go out at nighttime when they're on the spawning beds. They said there could be 50 salmon on every sharp. And you put the paraffin on a rag at the end of a stick. You have your fork, light the paraffin, run in, get the salmon, douse the light again that no one saw you were at. But they'd go home with one salmon. The freezers came then, and then flash lamps came. Yeah. Like that was good luck to one salmon anymore.
They used to salt them around here, though. They'd have a barrel and they'd splay them, you know, gut them and flatten them and put them down in the barrel of salt.
There was an estate up in Dunard, which is above Ballinglass, which is on the Carrie Gower, a tributary of the main Slaney up above Ballinglass. And one of the rules for the labour force that time was to be not fed salmon more than 4 days a week. You know, but they used to feed the salmon to the pigs.
Jeez. Yep.
And that was the same on all rivers, I'm sure, you know.
Everything's about spring salmon. Is there a grill strong?
We used to call them May tidies. Come in May. You wouldn't be out for them, no. They do come, but look at the grills. As I said earlier, it's a long way around to the estuary of the Slaney.
Yeah.
And there are nets everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
And I think perhaps that's why, it could be one of the reasons why it's known as the spring salmon river, because, you know, the high seas are rough in the wintertime when they're travelling.
Yeah.
Before we let you go, we've one final question, Tom.
So would you let us know there what your most memorable fish on the fly is, Richard?
Well, the most memorable fish on the Slaney, I'd say, was 14 pound. Yeah. He had a tail 15 inches deep.
Ooh.
And by Jesus, did he play. He went up and down that river, skipping along like a sea trout. And ironically, I'm sorry I didn't keep a scale, because maybe it was a sea trout.
Right.
It might have been. I thought after it could have been a sea trout. I had him on a size 14 double black and silver store, 10-pound breaking strain, 15 with a 15-foot. So my heart was in my mouth, I can tell you.
Right, it was. What time of the year was it? Which was it very early?
May is the month up around with us in Tullow. March and April, downriver. As we say around here, come swallow, come salmon. Well, the water warms up and it becomes a very free-taking river. It is fantastic river in May. To see him coming up and take, it's fantastic, yeah.
Well, Richard, I'm sure you're looking forward to the start of the season. Come what may, it can't be any worse than last year for the salmon world in general.
I hope not, or we may stop. If we have another year like that, the river will be closed because they go on a running average.
Like, from what we've seen, it's early days, but there's definitely been more, you know, fish seems to be around.
A few have been caught, yeah.
It's better than last year at this stage.
Exactly.
Yeah, I have to say, you know, this time last year, it was already, you could see it was gloomy.
Yeah, so tight lines for the season to come, Richard, and continued success and best of luck with the Slaney River Trust as well.
One other thing to say there, actually, we're grateful. The Slaney River Trust actually has been followed by a lot of people, but we have Altamont Gardens here in Tullow, where I caught a few fish under for the lady who owned it at Corona North. And when she passed away, she actually left 100,000 in her will to get a rocky ramp on Clahaman. So that's what people think about the river. And unfortunately, time is running out. There is a time limit on that. It's unfortunate that it may not be used, but that's what people think about this river.
Mm.
Well, definitely. It's a jewel in the crown for Irish salmon and Irish angling as well. So best of luck to you all. Tight lines for the season.
Dara, thank you very much. And Tom, hopefully we'll meet you on Corrib. We'll get a few tips. Tight lines.
Our thanks to Richard Burgess for joining us on the show. And don't forget to rate, review and follow the Ireland on the Fly podcast on Apple, Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
Plus, you can keep up to date on IrelandOnTheFly.com as well as on Instagram. And myself and Tom will be back with another episode about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland.